Thank you so much, Melanie. And it's really a joy to see so many people here from so many places. Welcome. Welcome to coming together here in the Dhamma. So as noted, we will begin first with some meditation together, something that we can all share. And so let's just start right in with that, getting right into our body. So please find a posture where you can sit for half an hour or so, relatively comfortably, settling in. And if you feel comfortable doing so, it's helpful to close your eyes to bring the attention inward. But if you don't want to have your eyes closed, you can just keep them downcast a few feet in front of you. Perhaps beginning by taking a long, slow, deep breath. Really filling the lungs. And then on the exhale, letting the body settle in a bit. Be lowering yourself down into your body if you've been up in your head. And feeling the contact point where you're sitting. So your seat against the chair or the cushion or the bench, or if you're lying down, what you're lying on. Just feeling that support underneath you. Maybe your legs or feet against the floor also. And sensing the stability of where you're sitting. Sometimes it helps to rock back and forth slightly, or even forward and back, to find that middle point where your body is the most balanced, the most upright. Or if you're lying down, you can connect in with having a relatively straight spine. That gives the same sense of straightness. So allowing yourself to be supported by the base where you're sitting, and ultimately by the earth. And then rising up from that stable base is the body, with the spine in the middle. It floats upward like a sea plant off the sea floor, gently buoyed upward. And the arms can float like the fronds of the sea plant, head floating on the spine. Inviting the body to be flexible and soft like the sea plant. We'll go through the body and just touch into some places where there tend to be tension. Inviting some softness. So softening the muscles of the face, like around the forehead and around the mouth, jaw. Softening the eyes and the eye sockets. Often the eyes get a little tense when looking at a screen. And softening any tension on the inside of the head. Sometimes thinking creates a little grip in the brain, and just letting that expand. down through the throat, collarbone area. Down into the shoulders, letting the shoulders drop without rounding forward. So letting perhaps the shoulder blades slide down the back. Softening the arms, releasing the hands. Down into the chest area, the heart area. You may bring attention to the spot between the shoulder blades. When attention is placed there, it's easier for the heart area to just slightly open. At least we invite that. Releasing the diaphragm. Down into the belly area. Often a place with many layers of holding. So there we just invite maybe the first layer to soften a bit. On the in-breath, letting the belly expand, be round. And then on the out breath, letting it deepen. Down into the hip joints. Softening where your contact point is again. Down into the legs, having the intention to release any bracing, thigh muscles, calf muscles. Knee and ankle joints. All the way to the feet. So opening the awareness again to have a general sense of the body sitting. There may still be some parts that are tense or some parts that you couldn't connect with well, and that's fine. The body is fine as it is. And the same in the mind. We invite the mind toward ease, softness, simple, quiet attentiveness. Just being aware of the sensations of the body, however it is now. And as the body becomes more still, it's often easier to feel the more subtle sensations. And also the details of the breath coming in, going out. In the body, we experience direct sensations, not ideas, but really simple elemental experiences. So rather than thinking of my back or knee, or even breath, we can tune into simpler sensations that are not ideas. So, for example, we can feel hardness, solidity in the body. Place where we're resting against, there's some contact. The spine has hardness, the teeth, the bones. So tuning into that sense of solidity or hardness and its complement, softness, spread throughout the body. And we also feel sensations of heat and coolness. Perhaps there's warmth in the middle of the body and coolness on the face. Or the hands may be warm or they may be cold. Tuning into these senses of heat and coolness running throughout the body. And there are also simple sensations of motion throughout the body, natural motion associated with the breath, the expansion of the lungs, when the body expands, we feel the clothing against the skin. And the more subtle vibratory energy of aliveness. And more subtly, we can also feel a sense of liquidity in the body. The body is mostly fluid, fills in all the spaces, it flows from place to place. It's experienced directly in the mouth and the eyes. The liquidity binds the body together. Like water binds flour. And we can sense that. So this body, the experience of the body, is simply a combination of hardness, warmth, motion, and liquidity or binding together. These are the basic elements of the experience of the body. And just resting in the play of those elements. body is always changing. Sensations arise and pass. Momentarily and over longer periods. Dynamic, shifting. And there's a sense of ease and rest when the mind just allows that to happen. Let the body be the body. Those same elemental qualities of hardness, warmth, coolness, motion, and liquidity are also found in the world around us. In the air, in the trees, furniture in the room, the warmth of the sun. All these same qualities surround us externally as well. There's really no difference between the internal elements and the external elements. Body is a part of nature. There is no personal self in the elements. These simple elemental sensations are not self. And perhaps now taking a bit deeper breath, filling the lungs, and on the exhale, softening anything that may be tense. Feeling again the general sense of the whole body sitting. The mind aware of the body. Although the body is not self, this is the body we have now. This is the experience of it right now. And we can bring in a sense of care. Care for this physical part of our being. Inviting softness, kindness, letting the mind infuse those into the body. Calm, equanimity. Expressing our care for this body. I will ring the bell in a moment to end our formal sit. But before I do that, I invite you to gently, when you're ready, open your eyes, still with a sense of awareness of the body. Taking in the area around you. We can see surfaces of objects that are solid, no different from our bones. You can feel the air, perhaps. The very air that goes into our lungs. Just having a sense of our connection between inner and outer. So gently, perhaps shifting your posture a bit, if that would be easeful for you. Just allowing the body to find its new equilibrium with the eyes open, the consciousness becoming more normal. So, I want to talk a bit about the body as a vehicle of awakening. Certainly is a good time to be thinking about the body as we're going through this pandemic. Maybe it's turned a corner in some ways, but not completely. And so, you know, certainly over this time, we've had to think much more about our body, more deliberately. being cautious of what we touch, being aware of our distance with others, making sure that we're wearing our mask. We're living with a more conscious sense of the vulnerability of the body, which is something that we share with all people. But in the general cultural atmosphere where we live, there can be a tendency for these thoughts about our body to flow along the lines of wanting to exert control and also having an underlying sense of anxiety about the body. So these are these two stances that we can have toward the body, is wanting control and being anxious about it, are stances that are dukkha, that are suffering. They're about discontent and they're about some aversion to our physical world. So there are a lot of better options about how to relate to our body, how to work with it. The experience of our body presents a tremendous opportunity for insight and even awakening. And the body is like a Dharma vehicle that we ride in all the time if we would see it in the right way. So rather than trying to just protect the body, which is one of the jobs of the mind, but we can take that job a little too seriously sometimes, rather than only trying to protect, we can also try to understand the body and to examine our mind's relationship to the body, because that's where the suffering or the freedom is. And this approach can really reduce suffering in our life. The body is an excellent teacher, really excellent, if you know how to use it that way. So I want to talk about aspects of body practice, and I'll be using some examples from the early teachings of the Buddha, but brought into the modern world, how we can use them in our lives. Body practice has a lot of different facets to it. And actually, troubles with my own body were what got me into meditation in the first place. I was suffering a lot from a health challenge. And even after many years, I can say that working with the body and understanding it and relating to it just goes deeper and deeper. So let's explore this a bit today. This is a quote from Jack Kornfield. He said, "Sometimes people think they're going on retreat to have an out-of-body experience, but actually they're going to have an in-body experience." So we have an embodied practice in this tradition, and we're really meant to go through the body, in a sense, in order to awaken the mind. Another teacher, John Travis, when he was early in his practice, when he was living in India, his teacher noticed that he was kind of trying to transcend his body somehow, based on his idea of what he thought practice was. And his teacher came over and gave him a poke in the chest and said, "You must go through this." And so John realized maybe he had the wrong approach. So we go through the body. We don't leave it behind on our spiritual journey. But what is the body? Do we really know? You know, what is our hand or our knee or our spine? The sense of the body is so different at different times. I want to point us toward the experience of the body, different from the idea of the body. When we're hungry or if we've just eaten, the experience of the body is quite different. If we're tired, it's different than if we're energized. If we're hanging upside down, it's rather different than if we're standing up, for example. That's the important part about the body, is the experience of it at a given moment. So, you know, is it even correct to say this is the body, much less my body? It's so different from moment to moment, how it's experienced. So body practice is wonderful because it can be approached at any level. The body is immediately accessible right now at a top level, and there are times when it's the most obvious part of our experience. But also, with some additional intention and effort, we can go to very subtle understanding of the body, deeper and deeper layers, revealing many truths. Now, it's actually said that the body practice can take you all the way if it's approached in the correct way and if you're brave. Mm-hmm. I think it takes some courage to go very, very deeply into the body. So the body is certainly the physical vehicle for what are called the heavenly messengers. Many of us have experienced these in the form of aging, illness, and death. Those are the first three. Some of us are moving into the aging realm, and it's different, and it's a one-way trip. It's only going in that direction. Most of us have experienced illness, and we've been concerned about that over the last year plus. And of course, death, maybe not our own yet, but those people around us and the shadow of it always with us. So the body is a gateway to encountering the Four Noble Truths through these messengers. And then of course, there's the fourth messenger, the messenger of practice, you know, being a practitioner, amidst all of this uncertainty and challenge with the body and the mind. That was one of the things that stimulated the Buddha on his quest, is that he was concerned about aging, illness, and death. And then he saw a very peaceful wandering ascetic, and he said, that looks like a way to be in the world. And we can do that without leaving our home. We have our home here in the body. Can teach us all these truths. So the Buddha said, it is just within this fathom-long body, with its perception and intellect, that I declare there is the cosmos, the origination of the cosmos, the cessation of the cosmos, and the path of practice leading to the cessation of the cosmos. It's quite amazing. The universe of the body awaits us if we wish to explore it. So let's talk a little bit about body practice. The Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on mindfulness, which has the most basic mindfulness instructions, has a lot of body practices in it. It has four domains of experience through which we can discover a lot of Dharma. And the first of them is the body, the most basic, the one that we encounter first in a sense. So these practices are even conducive to liberating insights. So I have the Majjhima Nikaya here, and we're going to look a little bit at some of these body practices and how we can bring them into our life. So attending to the body is a means of bringing about the wholesome mind state of mindfulness. That's what it means, that the body is an establishment for mindfulness. It's a domain, a foundation, a place where we can pay attention and the mind can become established into one of the most wholesome states possible, mindfulness. So the body is very immediately important in that sense. So in the sutta, there are a lot of practices that relate to the body. There's mindfulness of breathing, there's mindfulness of posture, of activities that we would do throughout the day. And then there are some different ways of seeing the body, such as through its parts, the different components of it, through the elements, which is what we did in the meditation, the four elements. And then there are also meditations on the death of the body. So specifically charnel ground meditations of a decaying corpse. We won't go through those in a lot of detail today, but they are interesting, and it's interesting that the Buddha thought it was important that we consider the end point of the body, where it's going. It is going there. So we'll talk about some of these today. Some are quite simple, and others are deep and maybe surprising in some ways. So to get a sense of how important these body practices are, consider this vision that's offered at the beginning of the sutta. It says, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. I always feel a little bit moved just to read that first passage. And the Buddha essentially says, this is it. This, if you did this, this would be sufficient. And says that again at the end of the sutta. So the sutta begins with breath, posture, and action, essentially. So the breath, many of us know, there's a sense of, this is usually during meditation, of just attending to the breath in and out, knowing whether it's long or short, and using the breath to tranquilize the body. So that one, I just want to mention briefly. And then I want to read a little bit from this section about posture, which is quite simple at first. It says, when walking, a practitioner understands I am walking. When standing, they understand I'm standing. When sitting, they understand I am sitting. And when lying down, they understand I am lying down. Those are the four basic postures. And we hear this and we might think at first, well, you know, what's so special about that? But it's actually quite interesting to start looking at posture. And for example, right now, we might be sitting. You might also be standing or lying down. What posture are you in? How is the body disposed, as the Buddha says? Okay, and are you feeling that? Are you aware of that? Are you balanced in that posture? Or are you kind of cocked at an angle or straining your body in some way to be in that posture? Would another posture be more suitable for paying attention and being at ease? It's also true that there are, for each person, the different four postures bring different amounts of ability to be energetic and ability to be mindful. So for some people, sitting is a very easy place to be mindful, maybe because we've trained ourselves that way. But we notice, for example, if we start paying attention to posture, that we're never mindful while walking. You know, we're sitting somewhere, and then the next thing we know, we're sitting at the table. And we don't remember walking between our cushion and the table, but we did. And so we have to check, oh, maybe it's difficult for me to be mindful while walking. Huh. So we can get some information about how easy it is to attend to the body doing certain activities throughout the day. And then that's the refinement of this same exercise, is that we start actually looking at actual activities. Let me read a few of those. So then it says a practitioner acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, when looking ahead and looking away, when flexing and extending the limbs, when wearing clothes and carrying the robe and bowl. This is for a monk. When eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, when defecating and urinating, when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. So that covers a lot of our activities throughout the day. And it's essentially saying, just be aware of what you're doing. So this is practice that all of us can do, even if we have a busy family life, even if we have a job. Even if we need to be out during the day, we can be aware of what posture we're in and what it is that we're doing. Oh, I'm walking down the grocery aisle. I'm talking. I'm not talking. You know, how is that? And we will again notice areas where it's more easy and more difficult to be mindful. So that's one little layer you can add, is which activities are more supportive, which ones are not. Can I become more mindful in the areas where I tend to skip over them? Just information that's useful in order to generate more continuity of mindfulness in our life, which is always supportive. So then, this is another area I want to highlight that's so useful coming out of these practices, sort of a modification, is we can check how much tension we're carrying at a given moment. This was my practice for in my daily life practice for about several years, and I still do it habitually, but it was a big part of my practice for a while, is that I was very tense when I began practice. And I was literally, when I sat in a chair, I would literally kind of try to hold myself up and not quite touch the chair. If I was sitting at the table to eat and my arm was against the table, I would be pulling away from the table a little bit or leaning into it too hard. I just had a lot of strange habits around how I was disposing my body publicly in sort of external ways. And so I practiced, okay, wherever I am, I'm going to try to be balanced and I'm going to try to let go of some kind of tension that is there. I mean, you don't let go to the point where you're flopping over, of course, but we carry so much extra tension. And so just bringing that awareness really eased my body. First of all, it reduced some of the pain I was experiencing. But in addition, I discovered that when the body is more relaxed, it's a lot easier to be mindful. And so suddenly I had more bandwidth in my mind to pay attention to speech, for example, and to pay attention to the needs of other people around me. Not that I wasn't at all before, but so much more could open once I relaxed the body physically. So this is a great kind of background practice to have as we go throughout the day. So then, next, this Satipatthana Sutta goes on to talk about some less typical ways of seeing the body. So as a collection of parts or as elements. So I want to read a little bit. So first, the parts. These are the famous 32 parts of the body that you may have heard of. A practitioner reviews this body up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the head, bounded by skin, as full of many kinds of impurity, thus. So it focuses on the impurity. I'll talk about that again in a second. In this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. Wow, how about that? So I know there's more parts than that, but that's a lot of them. They're not that appealing. So the point of this meditation in the classical understanding is that we tend to get attracted to bodies for the wrong reasons, you know, for things that are pretty superficial. You know, we get really lustful or drawn into parts of somebody else's body. And so the encouragement here is to remember, okay, that might be nice, you know, those parts look pretty good, but there's also a lot of parts that are not that appealing. And so it's in our culture, sometimes this has to be approached with care because we have a lot of self-hatred around the body. But I think it's meant also to see the body somewhat impersonally. The image that goes with it in the sutta is that a person is reviewing a sack of grain that contains a lot of different kinds of grain, rice, millet, peas, lentils. And they just say, oh, this is this, this is that. And in the same way, you know, there's a bunch of stuff in the body and it's different parts. And so we don't need to take it so personally and we don't need to get so attached onto one part being a certain way. After all, those of us who are aging know that the parts are changing and eventually they're going to fail. One of those parts I named is going to give you trouble someday if it hasn't already. And so we just remember, okay, that's just the makeup of the body. There are other ways to do the parts practice. Some, you know, interesting modern ways is to start to see the parts as connected to certain emotional states that we have. That can be a very rich practice. So noticing, for example, that our chest area is where we hold fear or sadness, whereas our anger is maybe more in the throat or in the belly. So connecting in the different parts and aspects of the body to our emotional life really helps to, first of all, not be as caught up in it, have a way to ground but also to understand what we're feeling. Sometimes it's not clear exactly what emotion is happening, but if we connect in, oh, this is that feeling in my chest. Oh, it's a little bit of sadness. Okay. You know, and then we can have mindfulness about that and be able to connect the body and the mind well. So then another kind of unusual way to see the body is as elements, which is what we did in the meditation. So we see it as, they're called the earth, water, fire, and air element. Oh, somebody asked what book this is. This is the middle-length discourses of the Buddha. It's the Majjhima Nikaya. And I'm on Sutta number 10, which is the Satipatthana Sutta. And if you haven't heard that term, it's the discourse on the establishments of mindfulness. It's the most basic instructions that we have in all of the discourses on how to bring about this quality of mindfulness that so many of us practice. The body is a great way, and the body is a lot of the practices in here. So we can think of the body as elements, like we did in the meditation. I won't say much because we did it there. But a lot of what that points toward is seeing the body as simply part of nature. You know, the solidity of my bones is not different than the solidity of this book, really, or the solidity of the Buddha Rupa behind me. It's all just solidity. And liquidity, the water we drink, just becomes part of our body. It's interesting to contemplate, when exactly does that water in the cup, which is not part of my body right now, is it part of my body yet? It's now in my belly. I guess it is. It hasn't been absorbed yet. Is it part of me yet? Where's the boundary exactly between this internal, external? It's not so clear. And so as we start to work with that as a Dharma understanding, we can really soften around the experience of the body and also get some insight into not-self, you know, into the impersonality of the body. It's really made up. It was drawn together from all these elements around us, built into this form, continues for a while, animated, and then it becomes a corpse, which, by the way, is the next meditation you hear. So there's quite a bit about the corpse. I'm not going to read all of that. But one thing that we can do, there's 9, by the way, charnel ground meditations. So you're actually supposed to notice, you can imagine it in your mind. You don't have to literally go and look at it, although there are nice pictures online these days. But you can imagine in your mind that you're seeing a corpse or a dead body. In our modern society, not everyone has. Now, I know we have a lot of people from a lot of different cultures here, and there are cultures that treat this corpses and dead bodies and death much more openly than some. Some do, some don't. So you may live in a place where death is more apparent, more talked about, more evident. But some of us may not. We may, you know, some people get to adulthood before they've ever seen a dead body, which was unheard of in the Buddha's time, unheard of. Except for the Buddha, he was very protected. But for most people, it wasn't that way. So we're supposed to contemplate, oh, the whole key to the death meditations is a single phrase. It's written here this way. This body too is of that same nature. It will be like that. It is not exempt from that fate. That's the key, is the me too. So when you see a body that's old, a body that's sick, a body that's dead, if you could immediately have the understanding, this body too will be like that. That's Dharma practice right there. So how do we do this in the modern world, maybe, or in our lives where this isn't so easily accessible? Well, here's a few suggestions. Roadkill is good. So if you pass a dead squirrel, a dead bird, something else that has met an unfortunate fate, you can remember that our body too would be just like that if it met the same physical encounter that one did. This body is not exempt from something like that. It's the same thing. We can also go to graveyards. So this is less direct looking at the body, but you can use your imagination. I recommend walking among the gravestones and reading the headstones, and you can maybe find people who died younger than you are now and realize, okay, yep, that's my body too is going there. And, you know, just recognizing that those were people who had hopes, dreams, likes, dislikes, they had a favorite vegetable, they had things that they wished for in their life, and maybe they came about and maybe they didn't. They had joys and tragedies, and now they're where they are. They're in the graveyard. And so, you know, just this is not meant to be depressing at all, but meant to be, some people find it enlivening, but it's also meant just to remind us of the truth of how it is to be human. And we share this. We share this destiny with every other human. If you think there's someone you have absolutely nothing in common with, think about aging, illness, and death. You have that in common with them. So all of these body contemplations lead us to wisdom, the wisdom of impermanence, the wisdom of not self, the wisdom of dukkha, of the difficulty of living in a body. And so they bring about the wisdom of those understandings, which can help incite us to practice, for example. And also they lead us to the kindness and the compassion that are so helpful for living in this world, in this challenging body situation. Sylvia Boorstein says, life is so difficult. How could we be anything but kind? How could we be anything but kind? And if the body teaches us that, yeah, it's very useful in that way. The deeper we go in the body, the deeper we go in the mind. We have to see these things, see how the mind relates to them, see what aspects. I did a sort of a grand tour today. Which parts of it landed? And you said, yes, that's very true. Yes, I've worked with that. Yes, I want to try that. And which parts did you say, ooh, I don't know, I'm not interested, or maybe later. That's okay. Just note which parts felt attractive and which ones didn't. And see what happens. See what your heart points you toward. Maybe the challenging ones are right where you should practice next. Who knows? So I have great respect for the body. It really is a vehicle of skillful action, a vehicle of insight, and potentially a vehicle of liberation. So recall the quote I read at the beginning from the Buddha, it is just within this fathom-long body with its perception and intellect that I declare there is the cosmos, the origination of the cosmos, the cessation of the cosmos, and the path of practice leading to the cessation of the cosmos. So this physical form here, this one, and yours, presents the mind with a profound opportunity to free itself in so many ways. And then we can live. Then we can live in the body, in the world, at ease in the heart with whatever happens. So I think I'll conclude there. And I would really love to hear any of your questions. And if anybody's brave enough to come on screen and show your body, that would be great also. Please, the floor is open. Okay, I see that there's one there. Okay, here we go. Okay, so this person has been meditating for several years, and over the last 6 months, there's twitching, sudden tick-like movements quite often in meditation. And they wonder if this is common and what might be causing it. It's pronounced and frequent so that it would be obvious to others. Yes. First of all, this is very common. This is something that happens in meditation, it doesn't have to be only at the beginning of practice. It could come really at any time during our practice. There's a lot going on in the body. And as we open in the mind to the body through breath meditation or body meditation, even other kinds of meditation that we think are more in the mind, they are touching into the body. And we start to connect into things in our body that we're holding there. Remember, I talked during the talk a little bit about tension and the fact that I was holding a lot of tension just throughout the day. I certainly felt that also in meditation. And there were times when I've also experienced some of this twitching or release of some kinds. It has many different forms. So first of all, don't be afraid of it. Don't be averse to it. It is normal. It's some kind of a release going on. And I don't want to interpret too much. There's a lot of systems of philosophy and meditation practice that will tell you what these things mean or represent or all kinds of things. And some of them are useful, some of them not as much. So I won't go into the interpretation too much, but maybe I'll focus on how to work with them. And so we don't want to be fighting against it. So generally the attitude is to soften and allow in some way that energy to release. It's an energy really that's coming. You feel it in the muscles and the bones because that's in the joints because that's where we're used to feeling. But effectively this is energy and it's not moving freely in the system. So we want to soften against that and allow it to move. But at the same time, we don't want to just collapse and totally let it have its way. That actually just invites it to get stronger and to keep coming back. What we need to do is actually meet it and feel it completely. It's something that needs to be seen, but not seen like with the thinking about it or literally with the eyes, but seen through direct experience of the body. So I find it's helpful to open the mind and the body so that what it is can arise and pass. It takes some trust to do this. And if there are movements that are a little bit large at the beginning, I think that's okay. If you're at a meditation retreat and it might bother or scare other people, please go to your room. So that you're not disturbing, but somehow we want to allow that energy to start to flow. You may get some insight out of it, like you may feel an emotion as it happens. There can be a lot of maybe anger or sadness or despair will come up. Don't worry about that. Just let that arise and pass. Again, don't be afraid of that. So generally, there's a lot of development of trust. And as you get to know your own body and how it is releasing things and how it speaks to you. Essentially, your body has its own language. You'll get more comfortable and more able to work with these things that come up. There may be, after you get through this layer, there may be another layer. and then a period of ease and then more. Some people, a lot of the release comes through the body. But this is the letting go of things that we have held on to in some way. And maybe that's a good enough start to get you going. Feel free to ask more if you have more. Okay, so more questions are coming. Here's one from Larry. Do you use Vedana practice when meditating totally or primarily on the body? And how does one really practice on the body without including minds and thoughts? Yeah, it's a good question. So I pointed us quite directly toward the body itself and the sensation, the elements is what we were working on in the meditation. But when he says Vedana, that's the next foundation of mindfulness. Remember I talked and said that there were four and the body was the first. The second is feeling tone or Vedana, as it says. And that is a very simple quality of whether the experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Those are the choices. It's not that there's only those three things. It's kind of a spectrum, but generally things are generally pleasant, maybe very, maybe not as much, generally unpleasant, or kind of neither one. And so, yes, the body is a wonderful, Vedana is the link between the mind and the body. So the feeling tone is the, it's in the body, you know, it's right between the mind and the body. It's the mind's immediate visceral response to a contact. And so, yes, I do use Vedana practice when meditating on the body. That's another dimension to consider. There may be pain that comes during meditation, for example, and we can treat the pain as the sensations like I talked about, heat, pressure, pulling, vibrating. Those would be kind of bodily sensations, or we can treat it as unpleasant. You know, this is an unpleasant sensation. That's also a perfectly good mindfulness practice. The part about, does one really practice on the body without including the mind? Of course not, in the sense that we experience the body through the mind. There's really no experience of the body that we can understand that's only in the body. We need them, they're integrated, non-rupa, are inseparable, but distinct, let's say it that way. So that's why the body can take us all the way to awakening. Now, awakening is in the mind, but we could do only breath meditation, for example, and that will take us all, that can go all the way to awakening by including how the mind is relating to the body, by using the body to tranquilize the mind, by noticing impermanence and letting the mind really deeply feel the visceral impact of impermanence that will allow it to have deep insights. So these things are very connected. It's a good point, Larry. But you can, you know, you can direct what your object is in various ways. So generally with body meditation, we don't look at, for example, you know, the creation of thoughts, you know, or the attitude of the mind or the view that the mind is bringing, except maybe to check that it's, you know, close enough, that it's attending well on the body. And then we focus again on the physical. But they're related. The body and the mind are conditioning each other all the time. So there's you don't have to worry that you're only focused on one. Okay. What are some ways of grounding oneself if meditation becomes overwhelming? Yeah. So the body, this is a great question for a day about the body, because the body is a fantastic way to ground. Now, the body itself, of course, may be experiencing the overwhelm. Of course, the overwhelm is in the mind, but we may feel like it's coursing through the body because they're so interconnected. In which case, I have two recommendations. One is to connect into the earth. Your body is sitting on something enormous. And I said at the beginning of the meditation, where you're resting is, of course, your seat, but ultimately you're supported by the earth. And so we can allow that to be the domain of grounding, literally the ground. Think of the way the Buddha touched the earth when Mara came the night of his awakening and said, you know, who are you to awaken? And the Buddha touched the earth and said, I can awaken. He connected himself to everything through that gesture. So it's a very powerful gesture. So that's one idea, is to use the earth as something solid. In fact, there's a sutta where the Buddha says, make your meditation like the earth. Or when your meditation is like the earth, disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. That's it was useful then and it's useful now. So that's one. Another is to use space. So we're surrounded by space. Of course, you may be in a small room, you may have walls, you know, right behind you. But remember that the space, even solid objects are mostly space, atoms are mostly space. The space connects everything and it extends everywhere. So if we can allow our mind to feel, to get bigger, to feel into that space that's around us, it's much easier to hold something that is becoming overwhelming. Let it release into something bigger. We don't have to hold everything that comes in meditation. You can give it externally, the earth and the air and the space will take it. they will easily take it from us. So, but if, you know, even if that is not sufficient while you're meditating, then please open your eyes and you can look, for example, up into the corner of the room. Often places where angles meet, windows, ceilings, floor tiles, literally right angles are nice for the mind. You can connect there and kind of ground yourself and just allow yourself to notice the color of what you're looking at. So you look up at the corner, the paint is gray. Got it, gray. So this is important if we're having something come that's more than we feel like we can hold at that moment. It's very grounding and helpful. I hope that will be useful. Here's one from Marilyn. Would you please list a few other practical ways to be aware of one's body in daily life? I've been meditating for 30 years with Shinzen Young, who teaches a lot about awareness of body sensations. Yeah, many teachers teach about this, and it's so useful. So other ways, practical ways to be aware of one's body in daily life. Well, so one of them is to, I talked about attention. I think I'll reiterate that one because it's so important, is to just feel whether or not the surfaces where you're touching, if you're tightening up against them, or if you're kind of leaning into them too hard, kind of, you know, aversion and attraction essentially is going on in the mind. So having a sense of ease with the physical things that we're touching is good. You can also use breath meditation. It's not as easy, but that may be good for you to, you know, have to do something a little bit more challenging. It is possible to be aware of the breath while, say, walking around or while cooking in the kitchen, you want to feel the ease of the breath or not. I don't use breath meditation a lot in daily life, but I have heard that others do and can be grounding. Like, for example, when we are having certain emotions or when we're in encounters with other people, we may restrict our breath in certain ways, like especially if we're angry or if we're nervous, the breath gets constricted. It gets very shallow. Maybe it's only going to here. And if we're able to feel that, we might, you know, even just taking a deep breath can really help in the middle of a conversation. You can do it somewhat subtly, just connecting in with the air in the lungs. There's a nice elemental sensation. So that can be very helpful. I hope that's useful. Awareness of body sensations. I can't say enough about that. I think it's really grounding. Other questions? Chat, awesome, thank you. Good, I'm glad those were helpful. Yeah, and if anything I said you'd like more clarification on, or you want me to say more, you can also ask that. Well, one thing that I suggested in the short written piece that I sent ahead of today, I don't know how many of you had a chance to read that. I know some folks are new. One of the suggestions was to take really good care of your body in a certain way for 3 days in a row. And that might be a challenge for some of us, but you might see if you can try that over the next week. And taking really good care of the body includes a bunch of domains that we may not think about. One of them is food. You know, we don't want to obsess about food, but sometimes we don't eat enough if we're really busy, we're just running and running, or sometimes we're eating too much because we're eating out of nervousness or something else. Sometimes we're not eating the food that's best for us. You know, we're eating too much carb because we're not taking the time to get the salad in or the protein that we need. or we're having too much sugar or caffeine. So having a few days where we eat very healthy food can make a huge difference for the body. We might be eating at the wrong time. Maybe we're eating right before we go to bed, which works for some people, but it doesn't work for other people. Or we're not eating breakfast when we really should, and running out into the day and then getting overworked after a couple hours. So maybe for 3 days, try really to do well with that. Sleep is also another one. You know, most of us need more sleep than we're getting. Maybe really having a dark room, maybe not having the screen for 1 hour before going to bed is usually good. So don't get right off the computer and get right in bed. Have the discipline to turn off the computer and the phone and the iPad and the TV for a full hour before you're going to bed. That can be really helpful. See if it makes a difference, and just see how the quality of your meditation is, the quality of your mindfulness. Start to notice how the body affects the mind. And then, you know, since we care about our mind and our heart and our interactions with others, we might find ways that we can use our body to support our life in that way. Well, here's another one. So, difficulty with sleepiness. Try to get curious. That's very good, but sometimes it overwhelms you. Yeah. You know, it might be interesting to know that there's a whole sutta, there's a whole discourse about sleepiness. So apparently this was a problem even in the Buddha's time, even when they didn't work as hard as we do and they worked harder in some ways, but they didn't have the computers and cars and all of that. Nonetheless, so there's a lot of things you can do with sleepiness. If you're talking about sleepiness during sitting, one of the great things you can do is just open your eyes briefly. The stimulation of the light helps. But even without opening the eyes, we can sit up a little straighter. The straightness of the spine actually carries energy to the system. So yeah, just maybe pulling up on that spot between the shoulder blades is really good. So putting a little bit of attention there so that the chest opens, the body sits a little straighter, and then making sure the shoulders are down. That straightness stimulates the mind quite nicely. So there's that, there's opening the eyes. If you're really falling asleep, you can do walking meditation instead of sitting meditation. You can splash water on the face if it's really serious. You can do standing meditation. Don't do all of these at once, and just try one and see if it works after a few minutes. One of the more creative suggestions in that discourse is to pull on the earlobes. So stimulation point can be good. I don't recommend disturbing the meditation too much, but if you're really falling asleep, you can try a few of these and see if they work. You might also just be very tired. You know, it might be that you need to get more sleep. That can also work. Okay, and now here's another one. What about when relaxing the body becomes numb and loses any sensation? When relaxing the body makes it become numb and lose sensation. Okay, yeah, so I think there might be two different things going on there. One of them is that when in sitting meditation, it is possible that if we're not accustomed to the posture, we can have our leg or something else, quote unquote, fall asleep. And, you know, in the physical sense, literally what's happening is we've put a little bit of pressure on the nerve and it just isn't responding as well. So it feels numb. And if this is happening, you know, you can try just sometimes sitting up a little straighter. It's nice to sit in a way where you're angled down a little bit, so your hips are above your knees, for example. That decreases the pressure on the back and allows for the natural curvature of the spine at the bottom. That helps so much with the... So making sure that your back isn't curved at the bottom. If you're slumping over like this, especially if you're rounded in the low part of the back, you'll have a much greater chance of something going on. You may also need to do some stretches and that won't help immediately, but over time, if we persistently stretch the hips and the low back joints, that can help a lot to just open up that area of the body so that it doesn't need to, so it's not pinching anything. If your leg does fall asleep and you get the loss of sensation, don't panic. It will come back when you relieve the pressure in some way, and it's not harmful to the body to have that happen temporarily during meditation. It's happening again and again, and it's going on for a long time, or if you're getting a lot of pins and needles when you get up, or kind of spiky sensations, then you might need to adjust your posture in some way. But I've found that over time, we can learn to sit in the regular sitting posture, or can find a comfortable posture in a chair. It's not better to sit on the floor, by the way. It's best to sit in a way that you can be mindful. But maybe I'll share that it took me 3 years to learn to sit on the floor. I sit comfortably on the floor now for easily an hour and a half or so. But, when my body is healthy, of course, at any time, I could be injured or something else could prevent that. But it took me 3 years to really be able to do that for an extended period. So, with some persistence, it's possible. Let's see how it is for you. Certainly age makes a difference. But I said there were maybe two things going on. The second thing that might be going on is that as we relax, it is actually possible that due to deep tranquility, as we're sitting, we may not feel the body as well as we did when we sat down. We sit down and we feel how, we feel solid. We're in our posture. We feel the cushion. We feel our hands on our thighs. And then we might realize after half an hour of meditation, breath meditation, and it's very useful, we may suddenly realize that we don't really feel the body that much. Maybe some light tingling sensations, but we don't feel the shape of the body. We maybe don't feel the edges of the body so well. And when this first happens, the mind can panic a little bit for some people, not everyone. And so then we quickly, restore the sense of the body. But why? maybe you didn't need it at that moment. Like I said at the beginning, the experience of the body is totally different from moment to moment. In meditation, maybe you don't feel it. Maybe it vanishes. Maybe the edges are a little fuzzy. Maybe the shape of the body changes. It feels bigger or smaller. Or we feel like all of our attention is down into a tiny point in our shoulder, and then the whole universe is in that square cubic millimeter that we're feeling there. That's just shows us that the body is not what we think it is. Like I said at the beginning, what is the body? Is it what you see in the mirror? No, the body is what you feel, and it feels very different at different times. So get to know all the different ways that the body feels, along with all the wisdom that goes with that, that it's always changing, that it's not very personal, and that at any moment it can be unsatisfactory. Even the best meditator has to get up, go to the bathroom, has to eat, has to sleep, gets tired. That's the deal with a body. It's not a source of everlasting pleasure. It can't be. There's wisdom in that too. Anything else? Yeah, I see a comment about stress and fatigue. Yeah, be kind to your body. This is the one you got. And it's, it's going to get older and it's going to have problems like everyone's body. I'm not exempt from that fate, this body too. So be kind to your body. Be kind to other people's. Use it well. Take care of it. And when it's time, let it go. Okay, well, maybe we're naturally coming to the end. So let's just sit for a moment, settle back into the body. Maybe just turning the attention to the sense of the body sitting again, if your mind was out from listening. And just connect in and just, let's just take a moment to wish your own body well, whether it's healthy or unhealthy right now, whether it's old or young, painful or not, whether you're hungry right now, tired. Just wish it well. It's done a lot to get you to this point. And so we also wish that the merit that we've accumulated from our practice together, our contemplation of the Dharma, may it spread out, benefit other beings, the other beings around us that are in our household, that are in our workplace, family, our community, our Sangha, this group, and really all the beings in the world, all the beings in all their bodies. May all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings everywhere find peace. Thank you, everyone. Be well.